to become the first horse to win three runnings of the Count Fleet. He just missed it by doing, because of Mottoli. He's won this running in 2017, 2018. He was bested last year. This is his fourth appearance. Now, Whitmore is already a six-time Oaklawn Stakes winner. He's quirky, though. He's definitely a quirky horse. He's got a lot of certain mannerisms in the post parade, going to the gate. So those are some things that he does have to overcome. Now, he is a true closer. He was tactical kind of as a three-year-old, but he's kind of transitioned his running style, which is interesting. This race is going to put him over the $3 million in earning mark, which is really cool to see, because almost half of that has been earned right here at Oaklawn, which is just amazing. A really good race, though, as you've got Flagstaff from the barn of John Sadler, Rosario comes in to ride. You've got Bobby's Wicked One, who comes off a 91-day break from the barn of Al Stahl. Miguel Mena looks for the third straight win and steps back up to Graded Stakes Company. I mean, this speed on top of speed on top of speed. I tell you what, I can only begin to imagine the fractions that are going to be set on the front end. And it might actually set up perfect for Whitmore, because there might just be a pace meltdown as they just all kill each other on the front end.
I don't disagree at all. And I can't see how, you know, a Bobby's Wicked One, I mean, Hidden Scroll, you got to expect is going to be forward as well. There's it's just hard to see that Share the Upside wants to be forward, and here's Giroux again, that shows pace. Lexingtonian's going to at least want to, you know, gain position, down inside, into the turn. It just absolutely feels like a stalker closer, you know, has to be the lean in here. I totally agree. And listen,
and it's interesting because Flagstaff is actually the high weight in this by one pound. I mean, he's at 122. Whitmore's at 121. With Flagstaff coming off that grade two win, San Carlos at 7 furlongs, he's kind of tactical too, because he can come from off the pace. So I think Joel Rosario and Joe Talamo might be kind of sitting back and waiting for everybody else to knock themselves out. So they might be sitting back and just chilling and just mowing everybody down coming late.
You know, it hadn't occurred to me until I looked at, I'm just looking at the Timeform US pace projector. You know who has a chance to sit a nice trip in here?
Hit me with your knowledge, Steve.
Mr. Jägermeister. Mr. Jägermeister, who, now a five-year-old, making already his fourth start of his five-year-old season, Valerie Lund sending him right along. Attaboy Roy progeny do get faster as mature horses. He's been, very much, housed at Oaklawn and ran a good race in the Hot Springs on the lead. He doesn't have to have the lead, though. And
right.
if he gets a trip, I mean, frankly, his wins have come on the front end. But that Phoenix Gold Cup, and I know that there's nobody in there that, that really holds up to the top horses in this group. But I'm at least a little bit interested in Mr. Jägermeister, sitting about third, fourth behind Share the Upside and Hidden Scroll and Bobby's Wicked One. Might might be the first run horse. You know, Flagstaff has the same kind of line. Interesting. It's terrific. I mean, this is really a fun race, and I'll only bring up Nitrous making his seasonal debut because it's that same angle. Steve Asmussen, you know, bringing a horse back at Oaklawn. He's been at Fairgrounds, but he's been working steady for this return. And if he improves a little bit off of his, you know, off of his efforts from his 3-year-old campaign, Nitrous could be one of those horses, along with Hot Creek Hustle, that's running at him late.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, back to Mr. Jägermeister, you know, you mentioned that Phoenix Gold Cup. He beat Minister of Soul, who returned to win, and Chief Chickatrice. That was a really nice horse just 1 or 2 years ago.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
But Nitrous, you know, coming off that 219-day layoff, there were a couple repeat winners in his last couple of races, and you don't see 20-1 morning line very often on Asmussen runners coming out of graded stakes races. So, you know, lots to kind of hem and haw over. And we've seen big prices on our stakes. I mean, look at Mr. Big News, what he did last weekend. And we have seen some horses really, really light up the tote board so far at the meet, and it's not to say that any one of these horses has a valid chance.
Nancy Uri-Holtis with us, and Nancy, thank you so much. We'll be watching this afternoon, the two Arkansas Bred Sprint events, and then Saturday, absolutely terrific start to finish, 1:35 Eastern, first post, and the highlights. And you'll see these races, of course, on the Fox show. Apple Blossom goes as the 10th race, 6:16 Eastern, and the Count Fleet, 5:14 Eastern. Oaklawn, where the races go off at their published post time.
Hey, I want you to do me a favor, Steve.
Sure.
I want you to go on my Twitter,
yes,
and vote who wore it better.
Oh boy! All right, let me see. All right, we'll let's see what's going on here. What craziness?
Nancy Uri-Holtis.
Here it is, Nancy Uri-Holtis. You are why in between.
A gift.
Oh my God! Here we go. Let's see.
That is not one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Oh my God. Now that is outstanding. Has The Rock responded?
No.
Okay, he will. He will.
Doing?
That's very good.
Is that not funny?
It's
if
very
you can't
funny.
Laugh at yourself, who can you laugh at?
I will retweet that.
If you can't laugh at anyone else, who can you laugh at?
I love it. Well, that question gets answered on a regular basis watching the feed from Oaklawn. Nancy, thank you so much.
It is my honor and pleasure. Thank you so much.
We'll talk before the Arkansas Derby Saturday as well. Let's take a break. Top of the hour, a little past. Nick Tamaro standing by. We'll get the pick for, five play from Nick at Oaklawn after this.
Thanks so much,
Steve. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Ooh, well, I gotta get with a record machine when it comes to rockin'. She's a queen. We'll have to dance on a Saturday night. I'll hold a loom where I can hold her tight, but she lives on the 20th floor of town. The elevators are broken down, so I walk 1, 2, 5, 3, 5, 4. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, more. I'm on the cliff, I'm starting to drag. 15 to 4, I'm ready to sag. Get to the top, I'm too tired to run.
repairs. Till it's a fix, I'm using the stairs. Hope to hurry before it's late. I love my baby too much to wait. All this climbing is getting me down. I find my corpse draped over a rail, but I climb 1, 2, 5, 3, 5, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 5 more. I'm on 12, I'm starting to drag. 15 to 4, I'm rid of the sight. Get to the top, I'm tired of rock.
20 Flight Rock, Eddie Cochran, lost 60 years ago today. Unbelievable. We'll hear, I think, at least one more. In fact, my favorite, something else, later this morning. Nick Tamaro is going to join us, and I promised Nancy I'm going to send her that picture. This is very funny, the thing that I retweeted of hers. Who wore it better? Both her and The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, wearing similar turtlenecks and a similar, what looks to be, you know, kind of like a heavy sterling silver chain. It's very funny. But I promised her this great shot of that day when Creator won the Arkansas Derby. And who did Dale have? Dale had a big horse that in that race that he was disappointed with. I'll have to look up that chart. But we were back at the barn, and Steve was sticking it to Dale. Nick should be ready. He texted me. Me and I were texting just seconds ago. So we'll get Nick in here and see what he thinks, because the ticket building is going to be tricky in this sequence. The first leg is a $61,000 non-winners of two lifetime allowance, and there's a good, you know, there's a good three. I mentioned this yesterday. Wild Poppet, Desmond. Speaking of Dale, what's his name is in here? Everfast, who's now with Jack Sisterson. So building the ticket is going to be the trick, because when it comes to the Count Fleet and the Apple Blossom, there's multiple candidates, and the candidate to help us get through it, Nick Tamaro. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Excellent. Excellent. Going to finish the week on a high note and, you know, trying to just everybody doing what they can to stay focused and, you know, not get too overwhelmed by a difficult situation.
It's a good approach. I think very cautious, measured, and prudent, I would say. So good rule of thumb.
How about you? How was your week?
Good. Gone just fine so far. Didn't really get involved in anything racing wise yesterday very much. Was taking a more of a look at the Soquan card for the weekend, but you know, it's been a good week and still around, so I'll take it.
Well, let's get into this, because it's going to be a budget exercise, I sense. No, pick five especially.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a matter of whether you want to take what could be a strong opinion, perhaps in the first leg, and build off of that. I heard you mention it as I was coming on, but I mean, Desmond sort of looks like a horse that a lot of people are going to lean on. It might not be the greatest idea, but it looks like in a sequence where you're going to have very few opportunities to narrow down, appears as if he'll probably be the controlling speed. The blinkers are going on, which has always been a good move for Bob Baffert, clearly. What Baffert sends over to Oaklawn generally is really ready to roll. So there's just a lot about him that makes a lot of sense. Now, a week ago, we had a conversation about the first leg of the pick five, and you were talking about Wild Poppet, and he ended up getting scratched from there, and he resurfaces here. And I mean, I would say that even with the presence of Desmond, this is a significantly softer spot. And the good thing for him is that there's a lot less speed, and he's drawn the rail, which I think is pretty much ideal. So I would say that while a lot of people are going to find themselves to really put in a position where they almost have to single Desmond, I think the clear alternative is Wild Poppet. I mean, I would book Everfast at 4-1 with due respect to Jack Sisterson. This is just a plodding one-run kind of closer that it would be very hard to believe that he's going to be able to get there in a mile. Now, perhaps Sisterson's tried to put a little more speed in him. He is adding blinkers, but he will forever be one of the great trivia questions, which is who finished second in the 2019 Preakness. I don't think anybody's going to be going out of their way to remember the 2019 Preakness in general, but this horse running second at 29-1 was one of the more amazing things we saw. But that being said, I think it ends up being relatively simple. And that just gives way to a lot of races down the line in this sequence that really are anything but simple.
Yeah, agreed. The one other horse I'll bring in who also has got some pace dependency issues is Soaring Bird. Soaring Bird is not impossible in here, but I just don't know if there's enough pace, to get him there. But I put a little question mark by the Al Stahl trainee, and I don't mind Miguel Mena getting aboard either, who will motivate a horse.
Yeah, maybe try and cajole him along a little bit early. That would be I think that would be helpful. I wouldn't necessarily call it like an out and out pronounced bias, but Oaklawn's the type of track where having forward position is always advantageous, and you just don't see a lot of eventual winners come from more than a couple of lengths at most out at the pace call. And yesterday was another day where you needed to be in position. And this feels like a race with just a modicum of early speed where that's going to be kind of the situation again. So if he can get Soaring Bird a little bit more involved early, I think that would help. He has legitimate excuses for his last two. He didn't have the cleanest of trips last time on a wet track. It's probably not his preference. And two back, he was wide while behind a very, very slow pace on a Southwest day. So if you want to be a little, I guess, generous and give him some excuses, I think you definitely can include him at a nice price.
Yeah, we'll keep it simple. And so 1-5, pretty much the heavy lean in the first leg. That gets us to the Count Fleet, Nick, and just talked about it with Nancy. There's significant pace here, and Bobby's Wicked One, 44-4 and 56 flat, 108-2 in the Kenner when last seen in January. Al Stahl told us most recent visit that this was their goal, their next intermediate goal. But you end up with Hidden Scroll showing up in this spot. There's plenty of other pace interested parties. Share the Upside, I think, will be hustled out of the gate. See where Mr. Jägermeister ends up with Thompson. I talked about him a little bit at a price. Might sit behind the speed. Flagstaff has got California speed. It just doesn't feel like Bobby's Wicked One can get away with easy fractions. And I think we're looking toward the Stalker closer lineup.
Yeah, I mean, that's my hope. And quite honestly, I've been wanting Hot Creek Hustle to cut back for ever since the Gulfstream Mile. I thought he ran actually a very, very good race to be in close proximity of that pace. The pace was very, very strong, and I thought he finished with interest. I actually thought he ran great, and I feel like he's a tremendous cutback to 6 furlongs. I'd probably like him even more at 7, but I want them to fly in here, and I hope that Flagstaff makes it as difficult as possible for Bobby's Wicked One to clear off. Bobby's Wicked One has a great first step out of the gate. He's a very, very quick horse. And if he gets to the rail in the first couple of furlongs in this race, then I'm afraid they won't catch him. So I'm hopeful that Flagstaff is at least, that Rosario protects the inside a little bit and makes Bobby's Wicked One work to some extent to get to the front. Flagstaff is not a slow horse. And so I'm hopeful that he's involved a little bit. And then obviously, as you said, Mr. Jägermeister, we're going to find out what we're going to get out of Hidden Scroll, which is interesting to see. And then Share the Upside with Giroux, you think is probably going to show even more speed. This is a horse that Santana has really liked doing what Santana does so well, which is stacking him on top of the pace and trying to keep it as controlled as possible before unleashing him late. And I think clearly sitting on top of a slow pace last time did not work, given that Whitmore was a little bit more astutely ridden by Joe Talamo, and he stayed close as well. And Whitmore, of course, is generally going to outfinish Share the Upside in a race where they're heads up with 3 furlongs to go. So, I have to bet Hot Creek Hustle. I'm going to use multiple horses in the pick 5. I think you have to use Flagstaff. You have to use Creek Hustle. You have to use Bobby's Wicked One. You have to use Hidden Scroll. You have to use Whitmore. And I think beyond that, in terms of longer shots, I think it's a little bit too much of an ask with Nitrous off the layoff. I think he's going to need him to go just a little bit too quick. And quite honestly, in terms of closers, I'd rather have Hot Creek Hustle. I would say, you know, Hidden Scroll is the wild card, and I would not make a big argument against anyone saying they want to throw him out. You know, the comeback race was really not one that you need to make much of either way. He did what he was supposed to do. He beat an atrocious field by a huge margin, setting a slow pace. So, you know, one of the things that we've not seen Hidden Scroll do now is ever since the Fountain of Youth, really, and you can debate how much he did that day, is overcome any adversity. There's a horse that got involved in a supersonic pace in the Fountain of Youth and ended up running a great fourth in one of the most misunderstood performances of 2019, if not even longer. And perhaps now, I think the goal, of course, all along has been to keep him sprinting. The Carter was the target. Six furlongs is probably not going to be quite as good for him as seven. I think he's a horse with a little bit more of some staying power sprint wise. So we'll see. You know, I'm glad we have him back. I'm very interested to see what he can put forth. And I mean, I rate him probably the fourth likeliest winner in the field. And unfortunately, in a race that's pretty wide open, you do have to use him.
Between the Count Fleet and the Apple Blossom, a money allowance for fillies and mares. And there's potentially a tiptoe through here, but break even failed at 4-5 in the Spring Fever, and that may give everybody some pause.
Yeah, you know, break even's the kind of horse that if you're going to lose with break even, you've, as I would say, as connections, you've got to let her do her thing. And she didn't really get much of a chance to last time. Now, that wasn't because of anybody's bad plan or because of anything Joe Talamo did. The pace was just too fast. And she's not able to withstand that kind of pace. So, you know, she's a horse, I think, that you can understand a little bit better when using Timeform US pace figures. And in looking at those, you sort of see that the Jersey Girl was really the race that sort of tipped break-even's hand, so to speak, in the sense that she's not able to carry her speed for six furlongs in a race where the pace is exceptionally strong. The Jersey Girl pace was very, very slow, all things considered. And people look at 44-3 and they think, oh, that's very, very fast, but you've got to be using some type of pace figure. And I don't know if she's going to be able to withstand a hot pace. She's going to have Mount Brave and Take Charge Angel potentially right on her flank in the opening couple of furlongs, and that's going to make things very difficult. In fact, Mount Brave was involved in that pace in the Spring Fever, the same race that Break Even exits, and she actually ran better than Break Even. Now, that was her third start off a layoff while Break Even was coming back off the bench, so perhaps having a race under her and getting Rosario, I think, is a positive. With due respect to Joe Talamo, Rosario is very good at getting these sort of runoff speed horses to relax just a tad. I think you need alternatives, though. I think you're really asking for trouble if you're leaning too much on her. I don't love the inside post, but I do like the way Shanghai Tariff is coming into the race. I actually had no idea until I was looking at these PPs that Mia Mischief was even in training still. And so seeing that she ran second to her last time in a similar spot, I thought was a good performance. The pace was not all that strong that day. And she's going to have to avoid getting shuffled out, being inside. But this is a horse with a lot of speed as well, and I think she can get into a kind of a comfortable stalking spot, maybe behind the pace. And I wanted to use I thought Meadow Dance was a horse worth using. She's been successful in races where there's been a little pace in front of her. I thought her second in the Sugar Swirl was a good performance. And I thought Heaven's Whisper is kind of a sneaky horse. Now third off the claim with a couple of wins for Paul Holthus. She's a horse that's clearly improved off of what's proven to be a sharp claim. And boy, it feels like she's in line to get another really, really strong setup.
I'll tell you who else I think you got to take a long look at, and that's Headland. For Steve Hobby. Hobby has been very, very surgical with his starters this winter. You know, doesn't have you know, the numbers that he used to, but he's 6-14 coming in here with another 5 board hits. I mean, it's a stunning season for him. And how about him and Martin Garcia 5-6 together this winter?
Yeah, that's crazy. I saw those numbers and was you know, a little shocked. It's been a while since I followed Oakland as closely as I have this year, but you know, Hobby was usually a 15% guy or so. He generally had a lot of horses well spotted and whatnot, but it has been a very good meet. And clearly, if this horse is able to relax and make one run similar to what she did two back in the Money Allowance buying Classy Act, then I would say that she's a win candidate for sure.
She's 10-1. Good little race in here.
Should be every bit of it.
Yeah, I think so too, because there's too many, you know, there's just too many other bodies that are going to attract money. And I didn't put Nancy Holtis in a bad spot to ask her about Heaven's Whisper, but I do agree. I mean, from the off the pace candidates, absolutely. Let's get to the Apple Blossom, Nick. And, this is really a treat considering where we are, collectively to have, this field come together, is, serendipitous.
It is. I tweeted the other day, and looking at the overnight last time, there were 14 older females in a two-turn dirt race was 2015 Breeders' Cup Distaff. So it's nice to see. And, you understand a little bit about what would happen every spring if there weren't so many different places for some of these horses to run. But of course there has to be, racing nationwide. But I mean, I thought this thing was just terrific. There are so many different ways you can go. I can tell you this much. I won't use Come Dancing for a nickel. And I hope that she's bet down to favoritism. This is the kind of horse that I'm perfectly happy to bet against. I know she was very, very good in the Ballerina last year. Just about as good in the Gallant Bloom. Don't want to hold the Breeders' Cup against her too much, but she's a horse that hasn't had all that many opportunities outside of New York. And to be coming off the layoff, going two turns in a race loaded with speed, I just don't want her. I think that this is a situation where you're supposed to be betting against her. I think she's effective going quite a bit shorter. But and that being said, there are a million alternatives. I'm going to use Point of Honor, who I thought probably got a lot of fitness out of the comeback race off the layoff for George Weaver, now goes second off the bench. This is a filly that really lacked a good setup in any of her races last year, and being a one-run closing type, that's something that I think she could improve on quite a bit. I thought that what happened in the Azeri with Emma dropping the rider at the start was that you had Street Band and Lady Apple, even though they were pretty well detached from Serengeti Empress herself, simply chasing her put them in bad spots. I don't think they want to go that quickly early. Now, pace figure-wise, they were on a similar kind of pace down at Sam Houston, but clearly on a sloppy track chasing a horse that was just enjoying it all her own way out front, I think really worked against Street Band and Lady Apple both. I'd rather have Street Band back. I think that she's a horse that prefers a dry surface, and that was something that worked against her as well. And then, you have to figure out what you're going to do with Serengeti Empress. Do you believe that she's quick enough to get over and cross in front of everybody and clear this field? I mean, she's got a ton of speed. So wouldn't be a huge surprise in any way, shape, or form. And I think that Joe Talamo's goal out of the gate is going to be very clear. Cookie Dough also has a great deal of speed, and you're going to see her show some of it. And then, I mean, the most interesting horse in the race to me drew the worst post, because CeCe is a horse with a ton of upside, and she has done absolutely nothing wrong in five races, the worst of which was a day where she was four wide against one of the worst, most pronounced gold rails you'll ever see on Belmont Day last year. So now you have to try and get her to work out a trip from that far outside post. I remember back to when City of Light won the Oaklawn Handicap for Mike McCarthy and he had drawn the outside post. He was running against Accelerate. He was four wide on both turns and was still able to get the job done. I hope CeCe's able to overcome it like that. I'm going to use her. I could almost see her being favored in this race if she didn't have that far outside post, because I think the upside there is just tremendous.
I mean, that's the central question, right, is what Victor Espinoza does. And, this is further than she's ever gone before, and doesn't feel like she's going to be done any favors losing ground, being four wide into the first turn.
It could be a huge problem. And the other thing, of course, is that the horses immediately to her inside also look like ones that want to maybe procure a similar spot early.
Yes.
So I think with Victor's one of the best speed riders we've ever seen. And I think what he has to do is there's two decisions to make. He can come out passively and look to angle over as quickly as possible, or he can come out very aggressively, try and run with Serengeti Empress to almost to the turn, and then tuck in if she tries to clear off the field. So it's going to be, Yeah, undoubtedly, this is a spot where a couple of the horses towards the inside that don't really belong, if they end up getting scratched, then that's going to help CC's chances quite a bit, because I mean, the 14 is obviously extraordinarily difficult to overcome. But if she's the kind of horse with the profile, that I'm willing to take that chance, at least. And I think she's going to drift up in terms of odds. I think the way this will shake out is that Serengeti Empress will end up going off the favorite. But it's still going to be, such a contentious race. You're going to see value everywhere.
Well, Street Band, if I had to make a pick on air right now, Street Band probably is where I would go, because that number is just out of whack from a price standpoint. And, I'm going to end up using a few, including a horse that wormed her way into my heart last year as a 3-year-old. I think Horologist is dangerous in here. Technically it's third off the layoff. You know, she came back in the La Cunada, then she stepped forward going one turn in the Nellie Morse and just got beat. But this has got Baltus's thumbprints all over it, and if she runs back to that, you know, that midsummer action in August, September, I think she's, and I, she's certainly going to be overlooked, I mean, from a price standpoint, but she could set up shop, behind the speed, and I think she's dangerous.
You know, what's interesting about this horse, and I agree, I think she's actually very talented, and I think her pair of races in the Mammoth Oaks and the Cotillion are very underrated in terms of how good both of them were, including in the Cotillion when she was really never all that far off of the supersonic pace and still ended up sticking in there pretty well. What's interesting, of course, is that she actually took a pretty big step backwards for Baltus in her first couple of starts, and
yeah.
It's that most recent effort that makes you say, maybe she's getting back into some type of form. And probably makes you willing to go ahead and include her. I mean, I think for me, she would probably be a backup just because I'm going to run out of spots. But anybody who wants to use her in a stronger fashion than that certainly should, because when you have a situation like this where a number of horses have put forth the type of effort that it will take to win, you need to include as many of them as possible, because it's just that type of event and one where it's generally almost certainly going to be won by a horse that's done something similar to this in the past. It's just going to be a matter of when and how circumstances shake out to make it happen this time around.
The last leg, Nick, is a 50 claimer, and this is a classy group that has got a bunch of stake horses that are, at that juncture in their career where they're running in 50 claimers.
Yeah, they hit the fork in the road and took it, as Yogi Berra would have said. But it's actually similar to last week's Nightcap, where, small anecdote, Alcatam won the race at a big price, and I didn't want to embarrass myself too badly on Twitter, so I waited until today to say that I actually had a Derby future on Alcatam when he was trained by Chad Brown. I did not have a future on the Nightcap on what would have been Arkansas Derby Day in his 5-year-old season. But alas, that was the race that he was able to get it done in. This is a super tough race, and one where, and I think you're going to need to be very patient and probably very clever. I thought that Zero Gravity ran a good race last time. I don't know necessarily how good that race was. I thought he ran well going turf to dirt. I think his dirt races are probably a little underrated, and I think he's a horse that, while probably a little bit better on a wet track, I think he's one that you want to include in here. He's going to be a bit of a price. I think that Matru is an obvious one that you're probably going to have to use, having hit a little traffic last time at the wrong time. And, I mean, from there, it's just a matter of how deep you want to go. There's the pace situation looks as if it should be honest. I don't think it's going to be exceptionally fast. I would say that if you believe Kirlin Rules might be able to get clear of the field and get a little brave, that's possible. Kurilov is taking a huge drop in class, mm-hmm. given that a Pirate's Punch last time was just sensational and looks to me like probably one of the Oakland handicap favorites based on that prep race. And so, he's facing weaker. Obviously, Brad Cox is running for the tag recently and isn't uncomfortable putting him back in for 50, and he should get a good trip down towards the inside. So should Timeline, but he doesn't exactly get your pulse racing. This is a horse that really hasn't come back from the form that he was in prior to moving to Steve Asmussen's barn, and now looks like one that they're really on their way to giving away. So I would probably be more inclined to use Kirilov. I think there's going to be some support for DeGrom, who's moving into David Fox's care. It looks as if, looking at the overnights for a couple of these cards, that Bob Bowen is trying to consolidate as many of the horses that he owns as possible with David Fox in Arkansas so that they can at least keep running. And this is a horse who has past races that would win this easily. So, you know, it's a matter of whether you think that things will shake out well pace-wise. It looks like he's a horse who wants to be somewhat forwardly placed, and given that there's not a ton of speed, that should help. So there's just so many different ways you can go. I thought Spike Shirl stretching out actually didn't look totally ridiculous. This is a tougher race than he was in last time, but maybe he can be a little forward, and that might give him an edge on some of the ones trying to make up ground late. So you know, there was yet another horse, and he's probably going to be every bit of 20 to 1 or more that you can find your way to include and still maybe not make you you're still not going to have very much confidence at all.
Well, a couple of notes, too. I'm glad you brought up DeGrom, because those races at Laurel are really interesting. And his ability to, you know, finish into slow paces, that is awfully useful. And Corey Lannery signing on is notable. And, of course, for those that are Pedigree fans, this is the six-year-old little brother of Point Given, and the congrats, sire, and Turco's Turn, and DeGrom, you know, certainly has had a useful career. You know, he's made 300,000 and 9-7-6 and 35 career starts, and has pretty much run for everybody that he's, you know, that's handled him.
Yeah, I didn't look at the lifetime PPs. I feel like this horse debuted at Aqueduct maybe 2015 or so, and I want to say it was with John Terranova back then. So it's this horse that's been around quite a bit, and yeah, seems to run for everybody. Obviously, Claudio Gonzalez does a pretty good job with the claimers in the Mid-Atlantic circuit. However you feel about his operation, he generally can get them to take a step forward, and this horse certainly did. So it's no question about that. I didn't want to let you get the only, and it really wasn't random, but I didn't want to let you have the only random pedigree-related factoid in the race. And so, of course, I had to find a way to include that Spike Shirl is, of course, the granddaughter of the dam that produced Perfect Shirl and Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. So it is, you know, 2011 Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Turf, probably one of my last wins in that division, liking Perfect Shirl.
I love it. Well, Nick, the ticket coverage is, it's not going to be cheap. I think you need to reach a little deeper in the pocket if you want to have a real fighting chance at this sequence.
I think you probably want to see if you can find a way to hitting an early pick four, a nice exacta or something to juice up your bankroll a little bit, because yeah, it's going to be difficult. And as you know, going back to the beginning of our conversation, if you have a strong opinion about Desmond, or if you're obviously unlike us and you feel strongly about something in the Count Fleet, I mean, maybe you're of the opinion that Whitmore is going to get the setup that he's always needed and that he's been at his best with, then, you know, perhaps that's a place where you might want to lean on him a little bit, because to me, what looks like a certainty in the sequence is that the 9th, 10th, and 11th races are as competitive as you're going to find. And, I mean, to me, they look like spots where you could be five deep in each one. So if you want to lean in any point in the sequence, I think you're going to do it early. And if you do that, then I think it's probably going to either be Desmond or a horse like Whitmore and or Bobby's Wicked One.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's a difficult... It's a difficult proposition, I suppose, you know, with... The wild poppet Desmond situation, if they get beat, this thing will spin out of control.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be wild, no doubt about it. Good thing is that leg would at least let you get it out of the way, and then if they do somehow get upset, then you can get back in the pick four. And these multi race plays at Oakland are just outstanding. It's you know, it's been a crazy winter, obviously, and Oakland's gone through it with the casino closing and whatnot. But Oakland handled through the first 7 days in April was up $25 million, which is a pretty incredible number. And they do continue to put out a great product on a daily basis. And I think all of us collectively are very appreciative of what's still going on there and even at Gulfstream, too, because, hey, it's a nice diversion to be dealing with all of this and at the same time still be able to look at races.
Well, and Hammer's going to join us with no break here because we're falling behind quickly. But I will mention again the sequence on Sunday, Gulfstream with the force out of the Rainbow Six. And if people haven't looked at that, Nick, I doubt you've done anything other than glance. But you got a mile turf race, optional claimer starter allowance. Then there's a one-turn mile on the main track for 8,000. Then you got a very good first-level allowance going a mile on the grass with some horses people are going to be very familiar with, three-year-olds, including Let Me Know for Ian Wilkes coming out of the Tampa Bay Derby. That gives way to another one-turn mile event on the main track, optional claimer starter allowance, field of eight, and then a mile turf race, first level allowance for fillies and mares. That looks pretty good, and a full field there. And then a maiden special weight, 1 mile on the grass. And at least in this spot, we've got a field where all of them have at least started. There's no firsters to jump up and, you know, there's no Don Vito Corleones to, you know, to throw you the curveball as we had at Oaklawn a couple of weeks ago. But it looks like a fun sequence, actually, Sunday at Gulfstream.
Yeah, I actually learned this morning clicking on Equibase that they were forcing it out on Sunday. And so yeah. I made it, became pretty clear to me at that point what I'd be torturing myself with Sunday afternoon. So, yeah, can't wait.
Can't wait.
Can't wait. I'm on board.
All right, Nick, stay safe. Best to the girls, and we will talk next week.
Sounds great, Steve. Thanks. Good luck. Thanks for having me.
NTAMM, NTAMM 1215. So there's a heavy dose of Oaklawn handicapping between Nick and Nancy Holtis. Let's stay right here. Hammer standing by. And yesterday I was on the phone with Rick for a half an hour, and I got the walking tour of that's Chatsworth.
Yes. Good morning. Yes. Good Chatsworth, morning. California.
Very nice.
One of my daily walks. And of course, when we were talking, I walked by a famous Chatsworth hot dog hamburger stand, the Munch Box, and had to send you a picture, of course. Nice hamburger stand on Devonshire, a little, probably like 15 foot by 15 foot structure painted bright yellow gold, and been there since I was a kid, and I couldn't believe it was open. So I came home and told Gina, as I said, well, that's where we're having lunch today. We're going to the Munch Box. So it's, hey, You learn a lot while you're walking. I tell you, it was pretty wild out there. I'm seeing more and more people out and about, but not too many. But I got to get out and get your exercise. And like we talked last week, it's good to see people doing the right thing, staying in. And you know, a lot of masks going on there. I wear the masks in the store, but I can't do it just walking down the street. I can't breathe in those things, to tell you the truth. But I think we're doing a good job here in Southern California anyway, trying to do our part by, you know, doing the right thing. But good to hear you. You're in a good mood today, and had Nancy on, which, you know, I makes you, you know, think back not that long ago when I was at Oakland. I do the shows in her office with Jen sitting there, and, you know, I always would get the look from Nancy every now and again if I said something stupid or something, and she would come in and... yeah, I miss being around the live racing product, but, I think I made the right call coming home, just being, you know, in this situation. But, we'll talk a little bit later about the Oakland cards and what they've been, but it's been great, you know. Law, supply, and demand has sure taken over, and they've really, you know, done their part by staying open and doing the right thing there too. And listening to Pete. And it's funny listening to Pete. We were talking about having Gary Stevens and you know, his memory of things like that. And I always shoot back to days, probably 10 years ago-ish when we did the shows, because we've done this we've had a lot of different time slots, but similar time slots in the mornings on Fridays. We didn't take entries, and they could always have some guests on there, trainers, jockeys, whatever. And Gary was on a few times. And I remember, like you said, he'd remember everything. And I remember the first time we had Ed De La Housay on. And
had him on before, and Eddie is the greatest, very soft-spoken, and, you know, say, let's get Eddie on. Wasn't quite sure how it was going to go, because you never know. And I remember having a stack of PPs on the desk, and we did the introduction, and, you know, Eddie comes over and sits down in the chair, and I got all these things of all the horses he's ridden. I remember him looking at, like, what are these? And he kind of briefs them, you know, pushes them aside. And you and he talked for about a half hour, and it was, I tell you, it was one of the most amazing half hours just listening to you guys. He remembered every race he ever rode in, the fractions, who finished second, who finished third, and the recall. Gary's the same way, and I'm, you know, I know we've had Mike on, we've had other riders on, and it is amazing. These guys are just fantastic, and the way they articulate and talk about it is amazing. And Gary does that on his, every once in a while, you'll hear him, he'll catch him, you know, reminiscing about a race or a quarter mile of a race that he rode 20 years ago. And it's great stuff. And it's good to have him, you know, out there as, you know, the athlete in the stands type of thing. So a little bit more exposure.
No, it always amazes me whenever you have those kinds of conversations. I'll link out the Gary Stevens one. We can actually find that one, that conversation as well. If people, you know, if people have spare time and they want to hear some interesting conversations, I mean, our best of page has got, you know, some unbelievable people, including, you know, some of the memorial shows. Bobby Frankel, Alan Jerkins, et cetera, and Jack Vanberg. But those conversations, and also some of the ones after Triple Crown races and the like, they'll entertain you if you've never poked around our best of ATR page. Hammer, a couple of notes before we handicap, and I'm actually going to talk to Steve Anderson at least for a couple of minutes near the bottom of hour three. And Steve has got some of the hard news, including Scott Chaney, you know, becoming the executive director now of the CHRB. And the news from Del Mar the last couple of days, do you have a read on it? And you know, you certainly have been around Joe Harper long enough. Was there any tea leaves to be read from Joe's TV appearances midweek?
Yeah, well, back up just a couple minutes ago to go to Santa Anita first. Now, Santa Anita has a run for a couple weeks, and the people getting a little edgy here, of course. There's a meeting tomorrow. Tomorrow is Saturday, but tomorrow's the 18th, and there's a meeting with the County Health Board, Los Angeles County Health Board. I believe Santa Anita is going to be a part of this, and they're going to plead their case to the board. As you know, that it's county by county here in California, where, you know, LA County is one of the counties where racing is, and it's shut down. Orange County is the county, you know, to the south, and Los Alamitos is there, and they are racing. So everything is county by county. So they're meeting tomorrow with in hopes of just showing them, you know, the progress they've made and doing the right thing here with the social distancing and the testing and the limited number of people that would be involved in afternoon racing, and with the hopes that they can give them a date in the near future to get back racing. So there hasn't really been a date there. So there's not really a carrot out there. They haven't delivered any hope yet that, you know, I wish they would have said maybe May 1st we're going to start. Give a little bit of hope. So keep with that in mind. 3-4 days ago comes the announcement that the San Diego County Fair is going to be shut down. Now that fair, there's fairs in every county, not every county, many of the counties in California. It'd be too many to have. But the San Diego County Fair, which is held at the fairgrounds where Del Mar is the biggest one in the state, so it makes a lot of money for the state. And when they shut that down, usually runs from early June to early July, which has been one of the reasons over the years Del Mar can't open the backside earlier, because the fair's there, and it's a full-blown Ferris wheel, you know, cotton candy rides, you know, animals, llamas, pigs, you know, 4-H club. You can't just snap your fingers and have it go away. It takes a while to clean up and all that. So that's one of the reasons Del Mar only can open about a week before the meet starts. So now this fair is shut down. And you can read that two ways. Like, oh my gosh, they're shutting down the biggest fair in California. How can they go to Del Mar and race? How are they going to let that happen? Well, it's like a Disneyland. They with what's going on, they almost had to do that. There's, you know, like thousands and thousands of people a day go to the fair, and we've all been to a fair, and you get that. So, lo and behold, the next morning, they interview Joe Harper on local San Diego television, and you know, he is his usual eloquent self, and basically said we plan on opening on our scheduled time, which is July 18th. You know, fans or no fans, at this time you'd have to think no fans. But the significance of his line there was there's hope out there that the racing is going to continue here in Southern California at some point, hopefully in May. But the fact that he went ahead and said it, whether it's officially that way or not, that there is going to be racing as planned in Southern California. How that is going to happen, we're not sure as far as the barn area opening and things like that. But the mere fact that he said we hope to run our schedule as planned, that's huge news to racing fans here in Southern California.
Well, that part will give everybody the opportunity to plan at least, and you know, something to anticipate, because I don't know. I don't know how much hope there is to hold out for tomorrow's set down with the county health officials.
Right. I don't know either. You know, you mentioned Scott Chaney. He is, I believe the position is executive director, formerly held by Rick Baedeker, who was in that position for, I'm going to say, six, seven, 8 years. Not really sure the hierarchy. They have the head of the commission, and you have the executive director.
Greg Ferraro, Dr. Ferraro.
Yeah, so I don't know who reports to who, how that works, but Scott, as you know, is a longtime steward here in Southern California, various racetracks, and he is a lawyer as well. And let's sometimes, you know, we'll see. When people get put into that type of position, they're going to make a change one way or the other and make a difference. And let's hope Scott is, you know, good at leadership here and help things move along the right way, and maybe does some thinking outside the box and not, you know, not just be a go along, get along guy. So let's hope for that. There's a CHRB meeting. I just want to make this one other comment. A CHRB meeting on Wednesday, next Wednesday, the 22nd. So I looked at I went in and printed out the agenda, which is open to anybody to do. And it might just be me, but there's 13 items listed, which they do list, everywhere from, you know, where we're going to do with some extra funds to application to run a race meet at Alameda County, Los Alamitos, some official duties of the veterinary, public comment. But of the 13 agenda items, there's not one item on there about strategies of racing during the pandemic, you know, possible policies, what the board expects or what we might expect if we do open up. I just thought that was rare. I thought that'd just be like one of the number one topics to discuss there as far as, you know, if a track was going to reopen, what they would need to do. But maybe some things are going on behind closed doors, but I thought that kind of odd. Yeah. But that's going on the 22nd. There's all kinds of stuff going on out here, and I'm hoping it's moving in the right direction. You know, it's a long time to wait if we can't get going out here in May and carry over to Del Mar. So that's kind of where we are here. Hopefully, Steve at the end of the show can show shed a little bit more light, but. I since I've been back here, I get you know, a lot of calls. I'm trying to do a few things behind the scenes and get calls all the time, and I have to laugh because, as you know, or anybody in this business knows, there's really between the hours of 9 p.m. and 4 a.m. It's kind of, you know, that's untouchable, but any other time is open season, and meaning for calls. And I got my first text this morning at 4:53, so So when that little dinger goes off, guess what? That's when it might be an alarm clock. That's when you get up. So I had a trainer here, calling, asking a few questions about a few certain things. And it's just kind of funny. That's when your day starts. And that's when the day started today. And a lot of questions here and there about some things that are going on behind the scenes. And so hopefully this can get straightened out and get back to racing here and move forward. And I starting to get the itch there that other jurisdictions are getting the itch to get back and making some appropriate plans, the Kentuckys of the world and Indiana. And it'll be good to see when there's more racing out there on the schedule.
We'll continue to monitor. We're going to talk to Jay Pribman and Steve Anderson of the Forum in the next half hour. Jay will be with us top of the hour. Hammer, let's dive in and get Account Fleet and Apple Blossom opinion from you.
Yeah, let's do it. And once again, Oakland, the cars have been good all year, but the last, let's face it, the last 3-4 weeks and the next couple coming are just been great. The stakes have been full. And, it goes back to supply and demand. And although this is an extreme situation, you look at the stakes here. They got the Apple Blossom, which annually is the best filly and mare race in the country. I think it's just shown year after year. Got 14 horses. Count Fleet, if you look back and just have to look back at some of their horses that have run in here, running in this year, Flagstaff run 6-horse field, 4-horse field, 4-horse field, Bobby's Wicked Ones running a couple 3-horse fields, Mr. Jägermeister, a bunch of small fields. But when there's not that many places to go, they fill up. Yeah, Dub, anybody can figure that out. But it goes to show that sometime you can sit down and make some kind of schedule for these races and not have them on top of each other, that we will get more races like this. Less is more sometimes. And isn't it great to see these full fields of these horses getting together instead of, smaller fields of 5s and 6s with, 3 to 5 shots. Very unattractive wagering opportunities where, in fact, this is what it's all about. So I'm hoping coming out of this thing when we get out of back to full blast here, hopefully by the end of the year, 6-7 months down the road, that's some more thought put into maybe lessening some stakes and showing results like we have here. Count Fleet, great spot. Horse coming from all over. Now, to me, the story or the one of the number one questions you got to ask yourself is, are you in and out on Hidden Scroll? How do you feel about Hidden Scroll? That to me is the number one question that you got to ask. Is this, partial rocket ship gonna blow up again? So anyway, I'm looking at Hidden Scroll and I'm looking at Phil Mott. Wow, Phil Mott. I'm trying to think to myself, when's the last time he was won a sprint stake? So think about that for a second, right? So I said, let me look this stuff up. One of these crazy things. Now I went back in Equibase, and you got to go back year after year, and this is all hand done. You can't just type that in and find out. So I went back and I started looking at, you scroll back and you have to look at every race, every stake, every one. So I went back. This is what I found, and if somebody else found something different, I will accept it. But I had to go back to 2013 for the last time he might have run a horse in a graded stake, let alone win it. So I came up with the 2013 Aristides, and that Churchill Downs with a horse named Scatman as the last time Bill Mott won a graded stake. Now, if somebody else comes up, like I said, with something else besides that, I'll take it, but pretty wild, huh? Think about it. Can you think of the last time Bill Mott had a graded stake horse? Sprinting?
Sprinting?
Older sprinting.
Older male, you're saying other than a 3-year-old.
Yeah, other than a 3-year-old or 2-year-old, yeah. In the real sprint division. You can't, right? You can't come
not
up
real,
with
that. Well, but, maybe, did any, well, I don't know if you would you even, you're saying older, so even something like the Gotham really?
Yeah, not the Gotham. Not
doesn't
not
really
the,
account.
Not the Hopeful, none of that. Just like, it's one of these Count Fleet type races. Born up sprint.
Yeah,
tough, right?
So that's not really. Yeah, you don't really think of that as a division. He had that. Does it have to be a boy or can it be a girl?
No, I was looking for boys.
Okay. You know. All right.
But anyway, so that's almost, you know, that's a long time ago. It's just 7 years ago he's been one. But anyway, that was the Scat Man, obviously one of Scat Daddy's early stake winners. And